Hi, Chris. This is Ahmed from Gaper. Welcome to our show.
Thank you. Good to be here, Ahmed.
So this is Chris with us today, who is the co-founder, coach, speaker, cultural supercharger at BraveCore. And previously, he has worked with Fast Company, VMware, Apple, Walt Disney. So probably very interesting experience working with top tech companies. So welcome to our show. Great to have you.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
So can you share a little bit about yourself, your journey through these companies, and where you are today? How's the journey like?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've always been interested in creativity and leadership. So business and how those two things really interact. And especially in the context of leadership and culture and you know the future. So those are the main themes that I've been curious about. And that, you know, having those experiences at, you know, whether it was Disney and, you know, partnering with, you know, folks at Pixar, you know, the work I did at Apple, it was always about, you know, how do we get teams collaborating and working together differently and better as they lean into the future? And that's, so that continues to be at the forefront of what I'm doing today. And, you know, again, the origin of that really was just, you know, looking deep and first, you know, a realization that, you know, companies today are really built on decades and centuries of a way of doing leadership or a way of doing culture that is very science or data centric. It's very, you could say, you know, if we're looking at kind of mind versus heart, it's been very mind focused. And so, you know, kind of leading with the analytics, leading with the one answer. It's a very academic approach, you know, to life. And so there's been kind of a, not I'd say a wholesale rejection of that, but a lot of people are looking at that and saying, we want a different experience, right? They're bringing their work home literally, right? On Zoom. And so they're asking themselves, well, what is culture, right? And how, you know, what do I want to feel, right? When I'm in a company or a part of a company, and what does that even mean? Right. And then leaders are also asking, well, how do we do this? Right. So these are all really fascinating questions. And I'm curious about those as much as anybody else. BraveCore is interested in not having all the answers, but posing the kinds of questions and providing some principles and frames to guide people.
So it's pretty interesting in the post-COVID world, right? You said yourself, where's the culture, right? So this is my next question. Where's the culture in Zoom calls and all that stuff? How do you bring it in? Or you don't?
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a great post on LinkedIn I saw about this that, you know, it was essentially some of the leaders' view, I heard leaders even saying this, was like, we got to hurry and get back to the office, right? And, you know, for culture. And then it had a picture of the cubes that were empty, and that was the culture. Right. And of course, for everybody, you know, that was a lot of the experience, right? Which is pretty drab, right? They're gray cubes. It's kind of a lonely experience, right? In a cube farm. Now, granted, the things that we did appreciate that we have to find a way to integrate are the connection, right? Human connection with people, right? The relationships that we have. And so, you know, there are questions about that. Is there a way to do that in a remote way? I think we're exploring the answers to those questions right now, as we go. But yeah, it's definitely changed. There's been a lot of disruption. And so, you know, leaders are also asking themselves, well, how do we get results, right? How do we get performance? How do we execute, and ensure that that's happening? And I'm not sure that they're measuring, you know, the most important things. Now, are results important? Yes. Is business growth important? Yes. But are we going to get there by staring at spreadsheets and Excel all day? No. You know, Excel is not going to tell us, you know, what the heartbeat of the company is. It's not going to tell us what's the future of innovation in that company, right? Or how to collaborate differently. So these are all questions that we've got to explore further. And that's where we're really curious, right? With BraveCore is doing that. So just to give an example of that, you know, we got really curious about who does this well, right? And so we studied some of the most innovative teams in the world. people from companies that most of us have heard of, you know, even people that have written books, you know, that we may have read. So one in particular, his name's Ed Catmull. He wrote a book called Creativity Inc. And he was the founder of Pixar, you know, along with Steve Jobs. And so we had a chance to sit down with him, you know, for a lunch at the Lazy Dog restaurant in Cupertino. And there we were, and we're listening to Ed. And I thought, you know what, he's the resident Yoda, right, of creativity and leadership. So I'm just going to hit the wisdom dispenser button. And he's going to tell us everything. And he didn't. What he did was he actually sat and asked really great questions and then listened. And this went on for about 15 minutes. And after a while, I'm looking at my business partner and I said, I'm thinking, when is he going to just talk to us, right? He's just listening and asking questions. It was very weird for me. And yet, so it was actually a really special experience because we had his full attention. And so I paused and I asked him, Ed, what's your leadership philosophy? And he said, I lead with a question. And he told us about his experience at Pixar when he founded the company. He was a PhD, he's a smart guy. But he said, yeah, everybody had questions for him and they'd always ask him and he'd have an answer for everything. And he said, I realized rather quickly that I wasn't empowering anybody. And so his wife told him to go on this meditation retreat for 7 days. And all they could do is ask questions and listen. And they couldn't talk about themselves or, you know, it was just listening. And after about 2 or 3 days of that, he felt crazy. He didn't want to do it anymore. But he stuck with it and it changed his life. And it also changed his leadership. So, you know, that philosophy, that simple principle of leading with a question, we believe that that's one of the ways to unlock a beautiful future that is more collaborative, right? That inspires people, that makes them feel the way I felt, right? Which was, here I am sitting with the founder of Pixar, who's, you know, the former president of Disney Studios, or animation studios. And I've got his full attention and he was not distracted by anything. He was not in the mode of trying to show me what he knows or try to prove anything. So that kind of moment, you know, I guess we have to ask ourselves is how many leaders are doing that, right? And how hard is it to do that, really, to just give somebody your full attention and to be interested, right? And not just interesting. So that's one principle that we believe those that embrace it will lead the future. You know, it's about curiosity. It's about staying in learning mode, right? This whole idea of the expert model of people having all the answers, that's been disrupted. And yet there's a lot of people who are still acting that way. They're still behaving that way. They'll post things, you know, they'll talk about, hey, look at me, I have all the answers, I'm the expert. And it's not bad to have answers or to have expertise. Where it goes wrong, and again, you know, Ed was a very smart guy. He had developed all kinds of technology that's been revolutionary, right? Lucasfilm has used it in Star Wars, but you know, other companies, Marvel, they've been inspired by his work, but you know, he doesn't focus on his expertise as much as he focuses on building connections and connecting dots. And so that we believe is the future.
Nice. So you use the term cube forms. Do you have a copyright to that or we can reuse it somewhere else as well? That's a pretty interesting term, cube forms. Never heard it before.
Oh, no, it's open source. So, you know, feel free to use it. I will put in a plug for, we were so inspired by that principle from Ed that we actually created a podcast called Lead with a Question.
Oh,
based on that principle. And so we explore, you know, questions with, you know, people, from, you know, different companies, you know, Apple, Facebook, or Meta now, Nike, you know, people that have just wrestled with different things or lesser known companies, but that they're doing something interesting in their lives. And so we're interested about that, you know, staying curious.
Sounds interesting. That puts me into thinking more, but I have to come back to our conversation, right? So so I understand the point of view behind the culture, the way you explained it is pretty interesting and thought-provoking as well as a leader in my organization as well. But talking about future of work, right? If I want to put it in different buckets, right? One bucket is all remote, and the other bucket is all in office, right? And then there's a whole paradigm in between as well. So where do you think, is there a right balance, or everybody will just create their own balance?
This is a great question. And I know there's a lot of people wrestling with this question. There's been a lot of headlines about it lately. And it's important for us to be thinking about it, right? To have intention around this. I do believe, as with a lot of really difficult questions, a two-dimensional answer doesn't suffice. It's not good enough for us. And I believe that, you know, similar to, for example, the traditional view of an employer-employee relationship, right? Which I believe, really it's outdated, right? There's a third way, a middle way, or a way that transcends that, which is co-creator. And you can have an employer who's a co-creator. You can have an employee who's a co-creator. And, you know, and as an employee, someone can be a co-creator as an employee or as an entrepreneur, right? As to how they work with others. And so that's a third dimension that most of us aren't seeing, right, on a day-to-day basis. And in a similar way, is it, you know, work from home? Is it, you know, work in the office? The short answer, I have a friend he's a guru of exercise. Like, he is a workout machine, right? And I've asked him for advice every now and then about exercise and, you know, the health and eating, diet. And I've asked him, like, well, you know, how do you, you know, if I want to, you know, yeah, gain muscle or do this or that, what should I do? And he says, well, you know, as far as working, he says, it depends, right? It depends. It depends on what your goals are. And I think it likewise depends on what the goals are of the organization and for the people as well. But the common truism, the common theme or principle that will continue to be true is that it is an and answer, and less of an either or answer is my belief. And that may look different, right, for each company. I know, for example, Apple, they're a hardware company, right? So they do a lot of builds in person. The engineers are doing a lot of that. So their bias is towards trying to get people in person. They've also invested in a $4 billion campus. So that's a big, big space to leave empty, you know?
Big cubicles.
Yeah. So there's that. Like, they just announced today, I think it was, you know, hey, 3-day, return to office, you know, but, you know, see, they're still bookending it, right? There's 2 days out of that week that people can work from home. So I think we're going to see hybrid models emerge like that. I think Google's doing something similar. And then, you know, other examples, like if we're talking about industries, the software space, it may be a little more free flowing, right? Because people can build in, you know, asynchronous ways that are a little bit different than hardware, for example. So it may just be a little industry dependent, but either way, we've had a lot of behavior change in just a few short years that is, you know, not likely to change back because people have had a different life experience. I mean, take my own example. I've, you know, cut off, you know, shaved off, you know, I added it up. It was about a month's. I mean, if you add it up, it was, because I was commuting about hour and a half each way to, you know, work and back, Palo Alto over here. And, you know, you add that up over the course of a year, it's essentially 24 days of just driving. So just being in the car. So I shaved off a month worth of just being in a car. And, you know, it's pretty amazing that I have all this time that I didn't realize I had right now. Right. So I'll listen to audiobooks. I'll spend time with my kids. I'll work on hobbies, you know, passions I have. So I think the other thing is people have created space where they can work on what they enjoy, right? Whatever makes their heart sing, right? If it's music, if it's art, if it's reading, and this is good for the future. This is good for the economy. But I think also the key there is how do they also converge or collaborate or partner with other people to build things that are truly great? I think that's going to be the big question of our times. Less about the mechanics of how it looks, because I think we can navigate that fairly well if leaders are thoughtful enough. But the main question is going to be, what are we actually going to build together? And how do we inspire that kind of co-creation that we need?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. This is something which can't be answered like yes or no, right? So probably there's a huge paradigm in time. So going back into time, we had the COVID time, and now we are into the recession time, officially or unofficially. Things are not as good as they were like 2 quarters ago. Right? So where does that put everything in place? Just to elaborate on my question before you answer, there's on-site, there's remote, and then there's offshore, right? Mm. So recession, how do you see these things change in this time of recession?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds. I mean, it is a bit of a pendulum swing, right? So going back to our two-dimensional discussion about, the remote work, like, and it'll probably swing back, right? You have favorable market conditions that leads to good job extra good job opportunities. And then it swings back, and then employers seem to have this power. So it's kind of a power struggle, right, that shows up. And I'm not sure that is going to change a whole lot. It's just kind of a reality we deal with. And to your question, how does that look in the future? What's next? I mean, yeah, just shorthand, right? Great resignation, great, the response to that, which would be kind of a great realization, right? Where people are, saying, hey, I can kind of be awakened to what's happening here, right? And then whether it's a great recession, I don't know if we can have those two words in the same line or not. It's a recession, or it's a version of one, or it's a light version. Who knows, right? But what we do know is there are companies that are, doing some cost cutting. They're looking at, resourcing and layoffs in some cases, and that's a real question, right? Companies have to survive to be able to thrive, right? But how they do it is also everything. And what's next? I mean, I look at it like we're looking at something that's maybe completely different. We have to opt into it, but it's more of a great redesign, right? And if we do this well, again, it's a convergence of the needs of an organization and the needs of the people. And because if these things are at odds, we're just not going to, it's not going to be as fruitful. And so if we want it to be really successful, the companies that will lead the future, some of the brands that we've talked about, we've mentioned, and there are others, right? There's up and comers, there's startups that are doing this. They're going to be leaning into that redesign of how do we co-create together? How do we partner, right? How does an employer become a partner to, someone's success? So if they leave, it's, hey, congratulations, right? That's exciting versus we're never going to talk to you again, right? Like, those are two entirely different mindsets. And one's leading the future because it's just a different thing, and people appreciate relationships more and more. I mean, we're in a world that's become very sensitive, right? Our hearts are, kind of on our sleeves, right? And people feel, pretty free to do that. And so, and that's not a bad thing, but it is heart and mind, right? It's a combination of both. We can't let go of the business side and say, hey, let the operation do what it will. We don't care anymore about profits. We do. But being mindful of that is also being mindful of the profit, kind of the what powers profits, which is ultimately the people. And I would say, it's a talent that's inside them that we are inspiring, right? Where they feel like there's something there, a cause, a purpose, and it taps into why they're here on earth, right? That people are saying to themselves, wow, I am part of something special. And I'll tell you, the companies I've been in, I felt that, Disney, Apple, it was always something greater, right? We feel like I'm involved in a greater cause. Now, your personal life, you may have other purpose as well, but at least you find that overlap because it's so powerful as to what they're doing for their customers. And these are companies too, they don't stare at, now, well, they do stare at Excel and business results later, but that's not their whole first intention. Their whole first intention is let's make insanely great products. Let's make amazing things and then watch what happens, right? With customers and with our business. And guess what? It grows, right? But it's kind of like, I mean, a lot of other companies that are, I'd say, not doing it as well, are just staring at the ground, like a farmer, right? Staring at the ground, like kicking the dirt after they've planted the seeds, and they're wondering, why isn't it growing, right? And you're like, well, you have to give it the nutrients, like let it take it. It's going to take some time, right? And give it the the proper care and feeding that it takes.
Right. So among all this, there are companies like Gaper who help develop, build, scale products, especially for startups. How important do you think such setups are in the startup world and for the founders who are looking to hire smartly?
That's extremely important. In fact, some of the best conversations I have are with startups and startup founders. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason, I think, is because you're leaning into disruption, right? And you're okay with it. There's a comfort level with that. Companies that have been, say, successful for a while or for a long time tend to be a little more resistant, right? It's like the innovator's dilemma, right? Are they willing to embrace change or disruption as fast? Well, no. Why would they, right? But the ones that are great, like Apple, I mean, Steve Jobs, it was all about how do we disrupt ourselves, right? The fact that he went after iPad at the risk of destroying or cutting, out like MacBook. I mean, these things are, competing in the ecosystem. These are all case studies in how to do this. Toyota's done it, right? Tesla does it. So, there's a way to go about it. But the main thing I'm encouraged by is seeing this, kind of rising next generation of founders and disruptive thinkers, like what you all are doing, what other companies I've worked with and I advise are doing. I feel like they're advising me sometimes, but they're seeing it, right? They're seeing this opportunity, to lean into the future and to not just participate in some of the things we've talked about, but to show how it's done, right? And that's different, right? That's going to be really interesting as it unfolds.
Yeah. So now we have, I'm moving to the last question. So we have audience, which includes some founders and some decision makers. So if you have a minute to fix everything for them, what's your advice?
Wow, that's a great question. I would say the best way is it's the gift that keeps on giving. It's the mirror, what I consider the mirror test. So you start with, and this is actually, this was a Steve Jobs experience. That's a lot of other leaders too that I know of that do this. I mean, Ed Catmull, we talked about. One of the things that is a hallmark of great leaders, and it could be founders in new companies. I've talked to them as well. They do this. The ones that are great are the best as far as, shaping the future. They don't ask, what is that competitor doing? They don't look over their shoulders as much. They don't get worried about that. They don't focus on that. What they focus on is they do what I call the mirror test, right? They're staring in the mirror and they're asking, what do I need to do to lead differently? And especially in times of change, right? And especially in times of disruption, like we've experienced, it's very easy to settle into a mindset. And, we see it, companies, even in the tech world now, right? They're getting very, vocal about nailing down performance, right? And we're going to get serious about, who's delivering, who's not, what the results are. You're like, okay, that's one way to do it. It's a very traditional approach to business. I mean, how did it work out for, GE or those other companies that went that route, right? They started stack ranking, started cutting the 10%. Yeah, they're not around anymore, right? GE is basically a walking dead company. I mean, I'll just call it out, right? It's a zombie company. And it has to do with that fact that they got into stack ranking and it didn't help them. I mean, look at Microsoft, right? They went that route with Steve Ballmer. It was a terrible disaster. I had friends that were there. They left. And now you have Satya Nadella, who's come in with an empathic approach, right? He's a compassionate human being. And he has led that company culture in a way that's very different. And, they changed that. They don't do ratings anymore that I know of. They do coaching, right? They do feedback. But they look to inspire their people, to lead and to work differently. And that all starts with a CEO who's willing to do that for to himself first, right? To ask that question of how am I leading differently? And by the way, Satya is a guy who, it's not just that he talks about empathy as a strategy, it's a principle, and he embodies it, right? He lives it in his life. I mean, here's a guy who, you know, he has special needs son, and he took all the time in the world to be there for his son. And that's powerful, right? And how often do we think about, you know, how often have leaders, thought about that kind of leadership as something separate from their work?
Yeah,
I think we're seeing in the future that that has everything to do with our work, right? That if we can be one as to our public and private lives and converge those things. And the way we do it again is the mirror test. And it's just asking a simple question, you know, every day, you know, what do I need to do differently? Right. And again, the tendency, a lot of leaders especially when they get concerned, right, or stressed, and stressed about cost cutting, right? Hey, business has got to go on, right? We got to find that money somewhere. And they might get into blaming, right? And finger pointing that the problem is somewhere else. And guess what? If the problem is somewhere else, the solution is going to be somewhere else. And guess what? If their solution is somewhere else, they're powerless. They've already given up the game. So the key, I think, to the future, the first building block of the future is the mirror test and asking, what do I need to do differently? And if we're asking, guess what? If we're asking that question as leaders, it's going to go down the organization that way. So people further down, instead of saying, oh, we're going to witch hunt, we're going to find who's to blame for this, they're going to say, what do I need to do differently? And you have a culture like that's going to own, the responsibility. That's a powerful kind of flow. And again, look at Microsoft, you know, they're a $1 trillion company now, or multi-trillion. They're right up there with Apple, right? And that's a major turnaround from where they were. So just one example of that, but that's what I would say is, hey, ask, you know, get clear and do that mirror test. Cause you know, it's going to be worth it. It'll be painful. It's going to be hard, right? Cause you have to ask yourself some tough questions. You may have to do some deep work and drill down into patterns, and they may be uncomfortable. You may unpack things that have some pain involved, right? About your history or your why you do certain things. And you may have to ask yourself tough questions about, okay, what do I need to do to change this? And who do I want to be? Right. But those are great questions to ask. And I just think it's a great opportunity, you know, to lead the future, but the way to do it is to be brave in that way. And then to be brave together. And to, you know, this is how we unlock this kind of power to create with others.
Start with a question.
Right. That's right.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Chris, for being on our show today. It was a pleasure talking to you, and I learned a few things during our call as well.
That's great. I likewise. Thanks, Ahmed. Good to connect with you.
Bye.
Okay. Take care.